Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Black don't crack. Okay.
Period.
Period.
I don't know, guys. I mean, I think we crack, but it's very like it's an ongoing process that is just like it's beautiful. It's like we age gracefully. I don't think it's we're completely immune to that. I'm seeing some wrinkles on my forehead, so I'm a little biased, but I think black don't crack, just maybe a little bit.
Just a little bit.
This podcast is about learning and growing, so let's get into it, shall we? Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of A Shot of Melanin. I'm your host, Michelle. And so here we are. We are almost done the season. We are coming into May. As I'm recording this episode, it is still April. And so that means that we've got two more episodes in May and then the last two episodes in June. And then we wrap up for the summer. And so, you know, I'm going to be getting ready to get things ready for the next season, for season 6. So if there's any topics that you'd like me to cover or maybe you have an artisan song of the month in mind that you would like to send my way, give me a chance to listen to it and maybe refer it to my listeners, let me know. Definitely drop me a DM, which reminds me, you can follow the A Shot of Melanin page. As we're winding down for the end of the season, I will be getting ready to prepare to launch a contest. And so the only way you're going to find out is if you follow our Instagram page, if you follow our Facebook page, our Twitter page, all of that. I'll make sure to leave that information in the show notes. But yes, as we are getting ready to wind down for the season, I do have a contest in mind, and if you would like to win some goodies, you know, some of these are like really good actual like giveaways that you'll definitely benefit from. Definitely you need to follow our social media page to get all that details, as well as anything else that is going on. whether you could see some visual components as well, in which I do drop some visual components on our Instagram page. So if you're more of a visual person, definitely check out the little bit of snippets that I do launch. And once the season wraps up, I will be making sure to have all the visual episodes on our YouTube channel. So get ready. I would say I'll start posting them by July. And if you want to see my face, who I am, want to put a face to the voice, as well as all the other guests that we had on the show, then definitely go check out our YouTube channel, which is A Shot of Melanin Podcast. And from there, you can essentially binge watch to your heart content all the episodes of season 5. So today's episode, just to kind of keep within the theme of this month, my goal or my topic was about beauty. And earlier in this month, we had author Venice on here, and was she talked about her book, which is meant to empower children in terms of loving their textured hair. Well, I wanted to keep within that theme for this month since we were on the ball, and I was thinking about having a conversation about a documentary that came out. Now, we'll get into the episode just momentarily, but I chose this particular documentary because one of the executive producers on here is Andrea Lewis, and I thought that'd be great kind of to have that documentary be discussed. Just to highlight who she is. Fun fact, I actually got to meet Andrea Lewis. I think I was maybe no more than 13. We have a family friend, and that is her niece. And so I got the luxury to meet her. Very nice person. Doubt she'd remember who I am. I was a kid when she first met me, and it was super cool. I would love to see if my family has any pictures of that. But I just thought that it'd be great to have the discussion around, you know, Black beauty. And it was very much a informative documentary. It gave you history. It gave you trailblazers. It gave you back then. It was giving you right now. It was giving it. It was just giving everything, all the information that you needed to get. And so I will discuss my thoughts in terms of what I thought of the documentary at the end of this episode. So let's not delay it any further and let's get into today's episode. Episode is just going to be a fun little vibing episode. I've got here actually family who is here to have this conversation with me. I've got my little sister and my little cousin up in here. So I'm going to let you guys introduce yourself a little bit, starting with Mona.
Hi, my name is Simone. I live in Montreal. I'm 30 and I work as a technical writer. And I love to have discussions about Blackness and Black culture. So thank you for having me on.
Of course. And little sister, your turn.
All right. Well, hi, everyone. I'm Patrice. I'm Michelle's little sister. I'm 30 years old, like Simone, living in Montreal. I'm a low vision therapist by trade, and I too love A Shot of Melanin, so I'm happy to be here.
And for Pat, this is not her first time. She was on episode seasons ago, so it's good to have you back. And Simone, welcome for the first time to the episode. So this episode is actually going to be a show review. I'm not too sure if my listeners are aware, but there was a documentary that dropped on Netflix. It also dropped on Xfinity if you are in the state, and it's called The Black Beauty Effect. It's executive produced by a lot of names. One of the big names that we know of because she's Canadian is Andrea Lewis. Now, if you don't know who Andrea Lewis is, she played in Degrassi back in the Drake days. So she executive produced this alongside with CJ Faison, Keisha Boyd, Jackie Ina, and Kalana Buffield Brown. So they were the brains behind the operation. It was like a collaborative thing. And, you know, on A Shot of Melanin, we talk about amplifying the voices and stories of Black Canadians. And we have a little bit of a Canadian in there. As I mentioned, Andrea Lewis was the executive producer. She also narrates in the documentary. And essentially, the documentary is a three-part. So the first one is makeup. The second one is skincare. By second one, I mean episode, skincare, and then the last one is hair. And so on today's episode, we're just going to kind of sit down and review and discuss what our thoughts are on the documentary, as well as, you know, just our thoughts on Black beauty itself and the Black beauty effect. So I'm going to start off with Mona. Since she's new, what were your thoughts on this documentary?
I liked the show. I think it was well done. I think the discussions that they brought up was well-rounded, and they backed it up with historical facts, which I thought was really interesting, and I learned a lot from it. So I think that the show, it has its place, especially on Netflix, and I think a lot of people would benefit from the knowledge that it brings.
What about you, Pat? What did you think?
I feel like there were some things I wanted more of. I wanted them to elaborate a bit more on a few things that I think they gave us a little bit of snippets. For example, the history when it came to, I'm jumping ahead of myself, but the Cornwalls and how that traces back to slavery and what that meant. I wanted more. I wanted some history on that. I felt like it was just too short. But I did, there was a few things in there that I found were like something that wasn't necessarily new to learn. But it was all in all, it was still informative. Yeah.
It was definitely informative. And so we're going to start off with the first episode and then go through the second and third. And so the first episode was, The Beat Effect. That was the title of the first episode. And in that one, they're talking about the history of, beauty and the makeup industry. Now, was there anything that you guys learned in there that you did not necessarily know, or did you guys recognize brands and you're like, I never heard of them before?
Yeah. Well, for me, the brands that they mentioned, a lot of the older brands, the brands from the 90s that were Black owned, like Iman and Black Opal, those I remember seeing because my mom bought those brands, and they were always in the bathroom, and I would always play with those and pretend to put makeup on. So very early on, like, I was aware of them and knew about them. But my question is, like, where are these brands today? Like, I don't see them in Sephora or even, you know, in big box stores. And to see, like, when they were talking about the shift between the you know, Eurocentrism to Black models running on the runway, basically, like, you got to see how these brands flourish and that there was a market for Black women who wanted to wear makeup. But now, even though we have a higher demand of darker shades and more multicultural shades, we don't see those brands thriving as much. So I thought that was like a good observation, but I wanted to know, like, why is that? Why don't we see these brands anymore?
Good question. Yeah. Pat, thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, there were certain brands there that I wasn't too familiar with. But like Simone said, like, the staples of, the older ones, like, I was like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that one. I feel like I saw it somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Black Opal. I remember mom had Black Opal. I also remember Imani. I remember going into the Bay and seeing the Imani kiosks. And that's a good question that you pose, Simone. Where are they now? You're right. I don't see them in Sephora. I'm wondering if maybe they're in the States in Ulta Beauty, because Sephora and Ulta are like the big makeup giants. And so in some cases, like, Sephora will carry something, but Ulta may not. Like, for example, the lip bar. The lip bar is not in Sephora, but it's in Ulta. So mm-hmm. I think maybe it's where would you find it? So if it's not a Sephora, maybe Ulta if you're in the States. But here in Canada, you really only got Sephora or the Bay. I haven't really browsed around the Bay.
The drugstores don't carry anything.
No, they don't carry it. Unless you're carrying Revlon, L'Oreal,
Maybelline,
you know, and I don't know how deep their shades are. Because I'm going to be honest, I don't pay attention. I don't even go to the drugstore. I go to Sephora to go buy my makeup.
Yeah,
you know, where you'll find a range of colors. Which brings me to a really popular one for us, which was Fenty Beauty. What were thoughts? Okay, let's bring it back. What were your thoughts when Fenty came out?
When Fenty came out, I was stunned because MAC was the first, the first brand that came out with a shade that I could work with, you know. It wasn't my shade, but it was a shade I could work with. And that was when I was just finishing high school, going on to college, and wearing makeup was more mainstream during that time. So, you know, you had your foundation, you had your concealer, you had to do the eyeshadow. So you could just go to MAC and you could kind of get a kit and work with that. When Fenty came out, it was like, whoa, this is innovative. Not only are the shades, like, there's a larger range of shades, and the shades are actually skin tones and not just a bunch of browns, you know. I think that it was like a business boom. Like, she really opened up a pathway for other brands to be like, oh, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, especially in the market today. So now brands are coming out with 50 shades, 60 shades, you know. It's like, where was all that effort 10 years ago?
Thank you. You know, where I'm looking like an ashy person. Like, because let's be real, MAC did make you look a little ashy. Like, if you look back at your MAC pictures, I remember looking back at my MAC pictures, like, ooh, I look a little ashy.
A little gray, a little orange.
A little gray, It was either gray on one side or orange on the other.
I was the orange.
Yeah, I was the gray. So you're okay.
Pat, honestly, what were your thoughts? I feel like when Fenty came out, there was this big boom. Like, literally, for me at least, there was a boom. I feel like I was wearing makeup, but I don't think I realized the lack of colors until Fenty came out. And I think that was huge when I watched the episode. It's like, oh yeah, that is true. That happened. And like I said before, I was wearing makeup, but it was probably yours.
Yeah.
So whatever you had in your makeup bag, I was taking it too and just putting it on my face.
Okay, thanks. So, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for letting me know you took my makeup. Thanks.
But
I remember going into Sephora, and when they first announced Rihanna's line, Fenty, and how many shades she was going to have, I remember specifically, like, it went to, like, when I say really deep shades, it went into, like, the really rich, like, deep browns. And I remember going in, I'm like, oh, I'll have time. I went, like, maybe 2-3 weeks, maybe a month after Fenty launched. I was like, I'm not going the first day because it's probably going to be madness. I'll wait till a month. And I remember going in and the testers were gone. They were saying people stole the testers. That's how, like, a much of a demand we need. People were stealing the testers. Who steals the testers? They were stealing the testers. So I remember, like, they were gone. Those. And it was always the darker shades, the testers for the darker shades were the ones that were gone. So I do agree with you. Like, it obviously shows that there's a demand. I do think because of Rihanna, we've seen a lot more makeup lines. That, like they mentioned in the show, there's Mented, there's Amicole, there's Lip Bar, and Lip Bar is stunning. Like, one day I'm going to purchase from them because I love their lipstick. I even love the story that they were trying to get on Shark Tank. And they were like, this is a stupid idea, but, like, look at them now. I bet, like they're sitting down and they're like, dang it.
Yeah.
We could have made money.
Yep. They could have made money years ago, but like they told themselves for some reason that there's no market for darker skinned women. Yeah. They're not wearing makeup or whatever. And now that Fenty's out, now that these new brands are coming out, you can see that, yeah, Black women wear makeup and we want to be represented just as much as anybody else. And so I think now that the shift has started, I feel like it can either go in two ways. It could go into like a renaissance where everybody's being creative and booming and brands are flourishing and making money. And like one of the speakers on the show said, there's going to be like wealth like for the Black community. Or we can go in another direction, which is just to sell out to these big companies and do not gain wealth from the things that we've been creating for years. That's my fear. So I'm wondering, where are we going to go? It could go either way. I hope we go with the former, but you never know. So we got to keep an eye out in the business world.
Yep. And I'm actually, you know what? You make a good point about that second point there. And we're going to put a pin in it because we're going to come back to that point. But before I go on to the next topic, which was skin effect, I did want to mention one thing about MAC growing up. I don't know if you guys remember, but when I was around the MAC era, there was always these celebrities that were hired on to kind of market and advertise whatever that was coming out, right? Like in the video, we saw like Missy Elliott for Viva Glam. We saw RuPaul. I remember one time before Fenty, Rihanna came out with a MAC line. Do you find that with those celebrities, especially Black and brown celebrities, did you find more of a push to want to buy because you saw Missy, Mary J. Blige, Lil' Kim, you saw them wearing the MAC? Did you feel as though that propelled you to go to MAC to buy whatever that they were marketing and advertising?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like for me, Missy Elliott was pretty cool. So it's a really great singer. So I would say for me, just watching her and then seeing her connected to a product would push me and entice me more to get that product, just by the fact that it's a celebrity and it's someone I watch on TV. So same thing, similar parallel with Rihanna. Again, someone who looks like me and is now pushing for a product, I'm definitely on board with trying that product.
Okay, Mona.
To add on that, I agree 100%. But I think the generation now are not as impressionable as we were when we were growing up. So I don't think they're as impressed with seeing celebrities that look like them on the cover of anything to purchase anything. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just the impression I have with the new generation that I see, especially with the brands that are coming out. When you look in Sephora, who's shopping there, whose brand is located where in the store, who's closer to the front, who's more in the back, things like that. You kind of notice like who's buying what. And
Right. Mm-hmm. You're so right. I think you're right about that, because I'm going to be honest with you. I can't sit here and think about a marketing or advertisement that has happened recently that have enticed Gen Zs, for example, to go buy. I think that was more us as millennials.
Yeah, because we had celebrities. They don't have celebrities anymore. They have influencers.
That's true. That's influencers. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go on to episode two. Episode two was the skin effect. Now, during this episode, they discussed the age-old question. So I'm going to ask it to you guys. I will start with Simone. Simone, black doesn't crack, does it?
Black don't crack. Okay.
Period. Pat, does black crack?
I don't know, guys. I'm a bit I'm gonna play it real. I mean, I think we crack, but it's very, like, it's an ongoing process that is just, like, it's beautiful. It's like we age gracefully. I don't think it's, we're completely immune to that. I'm seeing some wrinkles on my forehead, so I'm a little biased, but I think black don't crack, just maybe a little bit.
Just a little bit.
a hair fracture.
Not curve. Yeah.
So they asked the age-old question of does black crack, and I promise you, I'm going to say like 96% of black people do believe that black don't crack. But there, as you heard in the interview, there were a couple who said, actually, yes, black does crack. And so they went into the importance of having a good skincare routine. And you can do all that you can with a good skincare routine. But if you don't add sunscreen, you might as well not have done anything. And so it also showed you in the documentary what it looks like with sun damage. And, you know, I think there's also this misconception in the black community that black people don't get skin cancer. So I'm going to ask you guys, do you have a skincare routine? Do you believe in sunscreen? Do you wear sunscreen?
I'm going to go for the whole, when we were young, mom was always enforcing you got to wash your face in the morning, make sure you cream your face with Pond's, cleaning your body with Jergens, you know, like that whole routine has been so ingrained in me that now it's just like, if I wake up and I'm not doing something, something is wrong. So 100% skincare. Yeah.
we kind of grew up with we had a form of skincare. It's not as sophisticated as it is today, but we did have some form of it. We did have the Vaseline, the Pond's, and the cleansers and all of that. So we have the foundation of skincare, and it was really just passed down from our mothers. Like, they told us, you know, wash your face, cream your skin, this is how you do it. So I definitely believe in skincare. I have a skincare routine. I personally suffer from acne, so I have to be on a skincare regimen. I also have to watch what I eat. I have to drink water, water, water. And I have to put on sunscreen for sure. I will be honest, for a very long time, I have not delved into the world of sunscreen just because, and they brought this up in the show, the sunscreens that sell on the market are white cast. Mm-hmm. And no matter what you do, no matter how much you rub, it's gonna look white, purple, gray.
You're gonna look like a ghost.
Yeah, you're gonna look like a ghost no matter what you do. So it was like, and in Canada we have very short summers, so it's like, why am I gonna invest in sunscreen? There's barely any sun out here, and the sunscreen made me look bad. So you kind of just brush it off to the side. But now. Yeah, I got a sunscreen that doesn't white cast, but it took a long time for these brands to come out. So, it's not all my fault.
Yeah, like they mentioned Supergoop. Oh, sorry, Pat. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that they have Supergoop, and Supergoop is more of a clear. I went to Sephora and I checked out Supergoop, and depending on, they have different types, but the clear one, it goes on like remember back in the day, baby oil? It goes on like that kind of consistency. Mm-hmm. So it goes on very clear. I've got I saw some reviews on it, especially coming from black people, and they say how much they enjoy Supergoop and they love it. There was something that I didn't like about Supergoop. I can't remember what. I think it made you look a little too dewy when it went on, and that I don't like that dewy look. I think it's just as it goes on, it's dewy, and then it dries out. But I'm like, I don't like the dewy look. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like sunscreen was something I personally I don't think I really thought deep of it. And for a long time till this day, I don't apply sunscreen on a daily basis. But knowing
I guess now there's a lot more education involved with that. And I feel like when I was growing up in high school, elementary, that wasn't a thing. Like nobody was talking about, I'm going to put sunscreen on when you're hanging out with friends that are a different color of yourself. That was just not something that was like more enforced, I would say.
Yeah.
So now knowing that it's more, I guess, publicly aware, like people are more aware that, hey, like I have skin too. Why am I not doing this? It's something that now I think I can start training myself to apply in my daily skincare routine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think what it is, like I said, a lot of Black people don't have that mindset of, like, they don't think that they could get skin cancer. Mm-hmm. So they don't look out for it. Right. So I think that also, if there's more education on that, and if people have this awareness of, no, just because you're Black, and from my understanding, when I did my research on it, the reason why Black people are also encouraged to put it on is because of the hole in the ozone. The UVAs and UVBs are a lot stronger than they were back in our hunter-gatherer days due to pollution. And so because of that, everybody should be wearing sunscreen.
Mm-hmm. I don't think even white people don't be wearing sunscreen like that. So, but the real question is, why is my sunscreen $40? I don't think that people are ignorant that, you know, Black people don't get skin cancer or suffer from sunburn. I think it's more of, you know, accessibility.
True.
Not everyone has access to skincare in general, but specifically sunscreen. So, you know, if we can kind of fix that problem, I feel like more people, no matter what skin type or skin color, I think more people would be more inclined to wear it if it were more accessible.
Mm. I agree. Definitely more accessibility, because right now, for example, when we go to the drugstore, a lot of those sunscreens are the cast ones. I think they call that iron or something. It's an iron cast, I believe they call it. And so those are the ones that are, you'll get over the counter, and that one's the one you're going to put on and you're going to look like a ghost. But for example, a lot of these
titanium.
Yeah. I can't remember what it was. Titanium, iron. I can't remember what it is. But a lot of the good sunscreens, like, I think there was one called Black Girl Sunscreen or something like that. That's only available in the States. You can't get that here. So accessibility. Yeah. Right. So are we able to bring more of these products over here? But Simone, I'm going to tell you, though, unfortunately, I've heard it from the horse's mouth. They really don't think Black, like, I've met black people don't need sunscreen. That's why people, they burn. Yeah. So you're right. Okay. There definitely needs to be accessibility, but there is still that mindset that, like, that reminds me of back in the pandemic. I shit you not, people were saying, oh, only white people get COVID. I swear to you, people were saying,
who are you speaking to?
Well, that's a white people thing. And then when they found out that it wasn't a white people thing, they're like, oh, Black people can get that too. Oh. Yes, people. So there are people who do have that mindset. I know people to this day who don't think you need sunscreen. And I'm not going to call them out because they're a podcaster too. So I won't But there are people who don't. And so I think it's a combination of, they think it's education. People need to be educated. I do think accessibility, you make a great point, Simone. People need to have access to these things. If there wasn't a Sephora, I wouldn't get Super Goop. I would have to go to the States and stock up. But Sephora is the only place. Like, I can't go to a Shoppers. I can't go to Rexall here in Ontario. I can't go to Jonctu in Montreal. I can't go to, what else is it? Family Prix in Montreal. So it needs to be widely accessible and available to people. But I did want to take a trip down memory lane. What were some of the skincare routine that your parents made you start with, or name me the products that you use? Let's take a trip down. We mentioned Pons was one of them.
Patrice named all of them. Jergens. Vaseline was a huge. Carrie was on sale.
Only on your face, but that's a body lotion.
Yeah,
but that's a body lotion on your face.
You put it all over.
Oh, wow.
It went all over.
What about to wash your face?
What about Vaseline?
Yes, Vaseline.
I think we used to wash our face. We use Cetaphil, but no, it's that orange soap. What's that orange soap called?
Ooh, was it Neutrogena?
I think it was Neutrogena.
We use Neutrogena. Yeah. And then
Dove. Sometimes Dove was there.
Dove? I use, I hope I'm saying this right, Noxzema? My mom used to get a container of Noxzema.
I got the pads, the white pads.
Oxy pads.
Oh, Oxy pads are huge. Yeah.
Oxy pads. And you know what's funny? These products are still on the shelves today.
Mm-hmm.
I went into my daughter's 8, and we are starting a skincare routine. And so I went in to just take a look to see if any of these things are still on the shelf. And they are.
Wow.
You know? So I think that's the reason why us millennials look young.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know.
We've been upkeeping.
We've been upkeeping. Because have you seen these Gen Zs? Like, have you seen Jordan? Jordan the Stallion on TikTok? He looks like he's 47.
He looks older. Yeah, he does.
If you look at me, I don't know what people would say. They'd probably say
they still think I'm a teenager.
Same. I'm still getting carded
with these eye bags. At least give me 20 something. Don't give me no teenager. I pay taxes. No.
I have no idea what people will say about how old I look. I don't know if I look older or younger. I feel like I look young. Every time people think I look younger than I am, I've heard people say that I look in my 20s, and I'm like, I'm actually 35. And they're like, really? So, you know, get yourself a skincare routine, you know, a simple one. They did mention the same thing in the documentary, you know, get a skincare routine. Although I would have liked them to kind of maybe gone deeper into what a skincare routine could look like. Mm-hmm. What is a skincare routine? I know after research, it's a cleanser and a moisturizer, but you know, for different people, they might have different targets.
A toner.
Exactly. A toner. What are you trying to do? Do you need something to due to hyperpigmentation? Are you looking to deal with fine lines and wrinkle? Could you explain to me what hyaluronic acid is? Can you explain to me what all of these acids are and why are they important? I would have loved them to go down into an explanation of that. Just because for a lot of us, it could be new, you know, and they could have just said, you know, what a skincare is. It could be a, like you said, a cleanser, a toner, and a moisturizer, right? And then they could have said, if you're focusing on this, you need a product that has this incorporated. If you're looking for this, you need this. And it doesn't have to be brand specific, but more so what type of products you should be looking for to target those certain skin conditions. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that you can also go to a dermatologist. The only issue is here in Canada, there isn't a range of black dermatologists. And it seems to be an issue in the States as well. I think it said something along the lines of only 3% of black that there are black dermatologists, something as low as 3%. And I'm like, that's really low. So I think that, yes, you can go see a dermatologist, but will the person be effective? But also, we also have to talk about the education with dermatology and testing with dermatology. From my understanding here, it says 75% of products are tested for safety and efficacy, but not on black or darker skin. And that's problematic, right? Because that puts a label that this is for everybody, when in reality, it is not for everybody, right? And so it does have to, and I mean, there are so many people who can educate you on this. The one person that I could think of is, I think his name is Joel. He's on TikTok and he talks about a lot of the biases in the medical field. And one of them he does talk about is skincare and how, for example, eczema looks different on white skin compared to black skin. So that's definitely something that needs to be looked at, is the education, because yes, we could up our numbers of black dermatology, but if the textbooks don't reflect, you know, different skin conditions on different skin type, skin color, then we could, as they said in the documentary, misdiagnose certain skin conditions. Have you guys had any experiences with dermatologies here in Canada? Did they help you with your ailment, or did they just make it worse?
I can speak on that because I went to one of the top dermatologists in Montreal. It was a very pretty penny. Skincare already is a luxury. We can acknowledge that. Going to the dermatologist is another luxury. Not everybody can afford to go to the dermatologist. And they didn't make anything better. It was just a lot of applying products, testing things out, sending me home with a really big skincare routine with like 20 steps. After months and months, and after spending so much money, nothing changed. And they don't really come back to say, okay, well, let's try something new, or let's test something different. They just kind of, you know, let it be and just hope for the best. Or if there's no solution, they'll just say, well, maybe you need to change your diet, or maybe you need to. There's like other factors that they will, you know, bring up. But I after spending so much money on this, I still have acne spots and things like that, so I have to make a lot of lifestyle changes. And so first of all, shrinking my skincare routine, making it simpler and not like, you know, oversaturating my skin was helpful. And then also, you know, doing things like drinking water, exercise, those things also help. And so, you know, it's like the dermatologist is not the end all be all, but it does definitely help to go see a specialist. And I feel like the luxury part of it is what's probably causing that low percentage of black dermatologists being in the clinics, because they're not getting enough black clients, or, you know, people to test on. If we had more people that look like us in the clinics asking for help, I feel like the demand would, you know,
shift a bit.
Yeah, it would force them to do something about it. Like, oh, we're having more people in with this skin type. We should educate more and, you know, find more black dermatologists to fill in that need. So I feel I feel like it's a luxury part of it that's kind of creating this divide in access.
I have not. I have not gone seen a dermatologist. And to be honest, I feel like, what's the point? I feel like in Quebec, I feel like just going into a clinic, you're probably going to be served by someone who does not look like me. And they're probably going to tell me things that may not really apply to me,
right,
and my skin type and what I'm dealing with. So I just feel like it's something that I know exists. And if the time comes where I need to seek out a dermatologist, I feel like the research is going to be a la max. Like, I'm going to do my research to just verify and be sure that I'm seeing someone who like has training and knows what they're talking about. Because the worst thing is to go to a clinic and you're paying all this money for someone to tell you things, and you're just kind of, you know, in the back of your head, like, I don't know about that, you know? I know.
Oh, yes. Yes. The dermatology in Montreal. I had acne too, Mona. Remember? Don't forget. I had acne too. I had acne and I had backne. So I had it from my face to my back. And we did the same thing. I did the same thing. I went to go see a dermatologist. They also gave me stuff. But we tried everything from dermatology to like proactive. I don't know if you guys remember everything.
Mm-hmm.
I tried Proactiv. It burned my face.
Oh.
My dermatologist prescribed me hydroquinone, which is the ingredient that bleaches your skin. It's like, it's an ingredient in bleaching products.
Yes. Yes. So
I was like, wait, I thought you the dermatologist. Why are you giving this to me?
And the thing
like,
oh,
it can help with the spots and things like that. But
the hyperpigmentation.
After using 20 products, I don't think. I think they're all just fighting each other on my skin. It doesn't seem effective to me. So,
yes,
yeah,
you're right. That product.
Nobody in that clinic, and this is one of the top clinics. I'm not going to name it, but
of course,
side eye. Okay,
we don't want to.
No, no, nobody in that
I
clinic.
I ain't making money like that, girl.
Yeah, but it was very isolating just walking in the clinic. It's not welcoming at all. It doesn't seem like they're really there for you. They're just like the check. They're like, here, put this on your face.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's why I think they need to do better. Like I said, get more black dermatologists in, also change the textbooks, the education around that, so that even if you have white dermatologists, at least they'll be able to properly diagnose, for example, like I had mentioned earlier, eczema, you know, they were misdiagnosing. Definitely. Things like that, and also be able to handle confidently in any things like hyperpigmentation, because that what you had mentioned earlier, I don't remember the name, what's it called?
Hydroquinone.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
That if you use that incorrectly, it could have, like, it could do damage on the skin.
Yeah.
And so if a dermatologist is prescribing a higher dosage, then it's doing more harm. It will not do any good. You know? Yeah. So it's all about also education on that. Yeah, I just remember those days of going into the dermatologist, praying that it works. Yeah. I didn't, I just kind of gave up in my 20s. Like, ah. I went on the makeup route. I decided that if I can't get rid of it, cover it up. And so I just used makeup. And over time, it really just cleared up. I think it was maybe after I had my daughter that it's cleared up. And I haven't seen acne since, which is great. But there was an interesting fact in the documentary, and they were saying that $465 million is spent on skincare by Black individuals. That's insane. That is a lot.
That's going to be $40.
It'd be expensive.
I find it concerning that when you go on social media, you have all these dermatologists, all these plastic surgeons, they're all recommending all of these products. So of course, it's now a $1 billion industry. You got everybody talking all of this, their secrets to everybody.
So 100%. Yeah. 100%. And at my age now, like, as much as I love makeup, and you guys could like attest to the way I like beat my face, I'm at this age now where I do want to focus on my skin. Like, makeup is nice, but I want to be able to go outside without makeup, and I'm just glowing in natural skin. Like, oh, I want that to be like the beat, you know? So I do find that as you get older, you kind of shift. Maybe you start off with loving makeup, but then as you get older.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information, information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You change, and you're like, yeah, makeup is nice, but I just want to be able to focus. So I'm actually kind of not surprised that there's a like million-dollar industry. I was just kind of surprised at the number, 465 million. I was like, I was kind of expecting like 65 million, but 465? That's insane. So What products have you guys used that you guys enjoy? Because they did mention some products that they enjoyed and that they liked. What were some that you have tried and you like and you're like, I'm going to stick beside this. I like this.
I think for me, like Neutrogena, I just like the facial wash in the mornings. And the burst beads, but well, they used to have the burst beads. That one was really nice on the skin. St. Ives I use now, which is the scrubbing morning again. I feel like in the morning, yeah, like the scent kind of wakes you up. So I like things a bit scented. But I don't know if it's good on my skin, but it's been working for me thus far. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Mona?
I've shifted over to Korean skincare.
Ooh.
They got something going on, okay?
I believe
it's they got something in them bottles. I don't know what it is, but it's working for me.
Do you know the name of the product?
I don't have the... I start with... So I cleanse my face with... what's it called? Oh my gosh. What's it called?
Like a soap?
No, it's... It's
cleanser?
Lab something. It's a cleanser anyway.
Okay, it's a cleanser. Okay.
And then I go in with my AHA BHA spray. It's from CoreX. Brand is called CoreX. And then I put on a little bit of retinol. And that is from Cetaphil, the Cetaphil retinol.
Yes.
And then I go in with the snail essence. Have you heard of that?
No.
Snail mucin?
Yeah. Like an actual snail?
Mm-hmm. They squeeze the snails. The snail mucus. And they put it in a bottle and sell it to you. It's called snail mucin, I think. And that, whatever is in that snail stuff, has been clearing up, like, the spots on my face. It's helping with the texture of my face. So that's staying with me for sure. And then I go in with a moisturizer. Then I go in with a moisturizer and then I go in with my sunscreen. That's my 5-step.
So what sunscreen are you using?
Snail stuff. It's from a Canadian brand, Marcel.
Oh, Marcel.
You can get it at the drug store. Yeah,
I think that's a Montreal owned company actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't find that here, but I know that it's available in Quebec. Here being it's Ontario, my listeners. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay.
So it's got hyaluronic acid in it.
And I still want to know what hyaluronic acid does and retinol does. But they didn't explain that.
No, but there's a lot of information on the internet, I think. There's a chart, I think, you can go in. And there's actually ingredients that you shouldn't mix together because they become ineffective.
Yes.
So that I dived into, and then I was like, okay, so I can't put my retinol with my niacinamide or whatever, you know, like.
Yes.
So you can, like, when your skin's acting up, you know what to put down, what to pick up. So
I actually follow a dermatology YouTube channel. Now, unfortunately, they are not, I don't know how knowledgeable they are on darker skin, but they will provide you information on, for example, what you said, like what you cannot mix, like what you said, like retinol with niacinamide. That's a big no-no. And they're called Doctorly. And I like their YouTube channel because they're very informative. They did do an episode for sunscreen and a sunscreen that is good for darker skin tones. And I did purchase it. So my skincare, okay, so I had two because I kind of wanted to try the two of them to see. Everybody swore up and down about The Ordinary. For one, it's affordable. It is ridiculously affordable, like $20. Like if you walk into Sephora, you're paying like $50, $60, $20 for a wash, $10 for I don't know if it's called a toner, but it's like drops that you put on and you rub in, and then another $20 for your moisturizer. Like $50 for all three. Whereas one product is Sephora, depending on whatever, is like $50. So I tried it. I didn't notice much of a difference on my skin. When I did a skin test, it saw a difference. I didn't see the difference, but it saw the difference. So there was that. My favorite one, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to it, but it is expensive. I really enjoyed, I think it was Fenty Skin. She had the wash, the toner, and the moisturizer. And I really enjoyed it. I did see a difference in my skin. I do think that there's, I could be wrong. I didn't look at the ingredients, but I did notice in pictures that I had a little bit more of a glow to my face. I remember I took a picture. I'm like, ooh, who's that? But there was a glow to my face. And I think I might go back to the Fenty one, which is funny because when I saw the review from Doctorly, they were like, it's okay. But if they had to compare, they said that The Ordinary is better than Fenty Skin. So I'll probably stick with The Ordinary because they said it is better for you. There's more products in there that is going to rejuvenate your skin, and it's cheaper than Fenty. So I probably will stay with The Ordinary, but I love that glow. Like they were saying rose water or something like that. It's not going to do much for your skin. So,
yeah. You know, a lot of it is gimmicky.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they did compare and they did look at the ingredients between, like, let's say The Ordinary and they were saying if you have to choose, The Ordinary was the best product for them. The other one was like, if you have no issues, if you're not looking to to better your skin and you just want something to slap on your face and say skincare, then
oh no,
then they suggested Fenty. But if not, it was The Ordinary. And in terms of sunscreen, I found a, based off of that same YouTuber, I found a tinted sunscreen. I'm just trying to remember the name of it right now. And I actually, I don't know, like I find that I look a little dewy and I don't like I'll tell you, people love that dewy look. I hate the dewy look. And because it's tinted, it is like your complexion. You can, and they said that if you want to put a powder on it to bring down the dew, you can. But the thing about sunscreen is you're supposed to reapply.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I personally think that they shouldn't have made that dewy. They should have made that come down matte so that when you put on your second coat of it, you know, it's not dewy upon dewy and like you're like shining bright. Like you know? So I'm trying to remember the name of the product. I think I have it here, actually. Yes, I do. Because I carry it with me to work. It's called Nude Stick. Nude Stick. And so this is what the package looked like. Oh, this is going to be so awkward editing this. People are going to be like, what is she doing? This will be available to watch in July if you're listening. But this is what it looks like. It's Nude Stick. And it's like literally like my complexion and color. They come in three for different. But this, it's like it's our skin and it's nice. I'm not a fan of the dewy. I'll still wear it because it's SPF 30 and we need SPF 30. I'll still wear it. But then I can't real, if I decide to put a powder to set it down, maybe I'll just do like a pressed powder instead of a colored powder. I don't know. But that's what I'm using right now. And you know what else I'm using? You guys are going to laugh. So if I don't want to put this on my face, y'all going to laugh. I use Banana Boat. the kid version Banana Boat, and I put that on my face. I haven't noticed a white cast on it. I use Banana Boat if I don't want to use this.
If it works, it's the job.
It's, yeah, exactly. And another fun fact, in the documentary they mentioned that Black Americans spend 20% more on skincare than any other race, which is it's a good stat. It shows that people are aware. For one, there's that awareness that Black does crack, and we need to preserve it. So I just thought that that was really interesting in terms of all these percentages that they presented. So we're going to go on to the third and final episode, which is the Crown Effect. As you mentioned earlier, Pat, you were talking about how, for example, cornrows were as a way to be an escape route for slaves. So we're going to get into, you know, the evolution of hair, especially we're looking more into the American evolution of hair. Being that we're Caribbean, we don't know. There's no documentaries out yet that I could be aware of that talks about like the evolution of hair in the Caribbean. But in America, they were talking about how, for example, they had to cover their hair. Or the many products in the house as a slave that you would use, lard, butter. I'm just thinking about all that in my hair. I'm like, ugh, that's heavy. then they talked about, you know, the first product, which was the Poro product, which was used to straighten out your hair. Now, do y'all remember those days when we used to get our hair pressed Saturday night just before church? It was a wash. And then we got the flat iron. Do you guys remember that trauma? I mean, that memory.
When you have to like hold your ear not to get burnt. And then when you got burnt, you just like, it was the worst pain feeling. Oh my gosh.
You have to keep going. You couldn't stop. There's no stopping.
It's kind of like, you're already in it. We were supposed to finish.
Yeah.
But I remember those days as well. And I remember the comb was either put on your stove. Okay, so let me explain this. Let me run this back because some of my listeners are not Black. Okay. So whenever we wanted to straighten our hair, this was before the flat iron, we had a pressing comb. And so the comb part of it was a metallic comb. And because it was metallic, it could be heated up. Now there were two types. If your parents had money, they had the electric one. If your parents didn't have money, it was going on the stove. So I remember we had both. I think we started off with the electric one and then it stopped working. And then my mom was like, I'm not buying another one. We'll just get the regular one. And so you would put it on the element of your stove. This was before flat surface, Gen Z. So don't come for us. We had the elements, which is a coil. And you would put the comb onto the coil, the hot coil. So you turn on your stove till it was red, put it on, and then they would put products in our hair so that we didn't burn our hair. And then you use that to flat iron your hair. Now, this is only a temporary solution because once water touched that, it reverted back to the coils. So that was only temporary. And then eventually we saw the introduction later on of things such as the relaxer, which they said was created in 1909, but wasn't perfected until 1954. They call it a relaxer is a way of straightening our hair permanently, whereas a press and comb was only temporary, as I mentioned. Once water touched it, it reverted back to its natural state. Relaxing, or creamy crack as it was known in the documentary, was a permanent state, and every 3 months we had to go back and get it touched up. I don't remember, it's been that long. So what was your thought on the creamy crack? Because we all went through it, all three of us sitting here, whether it was a jerry curl or relaxer, we all went through it. What was your memory about getting your first relaxer? And just give me your thoughts on that. Mona, we'll start with you.
I'm still on the creamy crack.
Oh!
I'm a creamy crack head. I very early on, my mom relaxed my hair. The hot comb was a saga. And then we went to the Chronicles relaxers, and you know, it was funny because when you're a little girl and you go to school and you know, your hair is either braided or whatever, the kids at school that were not black always had something to say about your hair. Always. There was never quiet time. So when the relaxer came, you know, you had luscious long hair and you were happy and you went to school with your bubbles, you know, mom put the bubbles in your hair and she did plaits or, you know, little twists. It was a great time. Then you got a little older. You had a little less hair. It wasn't as luscious anymore for some reason. You know, you do your research and you find out that, oh, my hair is damaged because of all this relaxing. Not relaxed anymore, it's just damaged. And you know, so you try your protective styles and so on. But growing up, it was so part of our culture. It was so normal for us to relax our hair. It was like, you know, every 10 weeks or 3 months, whatever, it was a ritual. And you couldn't escape it, because if you missed that deadline, you got that nappy hair coming out. Yeah. They used to say, they would say the kitchen in the back. When the back part would grow out too much, it was like, what's the kitchen in the back? They had so many sayings, but it was so part of our culture that we couldn't be apart from it. Relaxing our hair was part of just being black for us growing up. Anyway, for me personally, that's just how it was.
I top that. I agree. I think, like, at a certain age, I was just looking forward to it. It was like, it's kind of like puberty.
You look forward to puberty? I'm
looking forward. Well, I mean,
the transformation part.
Oh, okay. Got it.
It was like this thing that your cousins, your sister, your aunts, like everyone was doing it, and you wanted to be the one to do it. And I think the one part I remember saying to myself was, I'll be able to go into the pool and no one's going to look at me differently. Just because I figured I'd be swimming, I'd come out and I wouldn't have a fro. And back in elementary school, we had a pool right next door, and we were going to that pool as often as being in class.
Yep.
And I remember coming out of the pool with a fro and the little boy just standing up looking at me like if I was on planet 9, like our Pluto or something, like I was an alien.
What?
And I just wanted that perm so that I wouldn't stand out and I would be just like my peers. So yeah, perm, like it was a huge thing even for myself. And I think it's just a part of black culture. And I don't think it's necessarily like, to me, if somebody asked me, well, why did you do it? And like, why didn't you just keep your own texture? I would say again, it's not so much that I at the time thought like in the long run, the effects of what it would do to my hair. I 100%. Just wanted to be with my peers and look like them, quote unquote.
Right.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, we were young. Right. We were probably 10, 11, 12, 13. You're hanging around with a bunch of white kids, especially the area that I'm in. I'm not talking about anybody who's living from Toronto, especially if you're from Scarborough. Please disregard this. But like from the areas that we were predominantly around white people. And so you really wanted to blend in. I almost feel like getting a relaxer was like a rite of passage. I do not know one black woman who did not get a relaxer. Even the people that I didn't suspect, I was like, I don't think she'd get a relaxer. I found out they got a relaxer. You know, and I just think it's a rite of passage. Like everyone at our time, I can't speak on behalf of now, but at our time growing up, it was something that we wanted to do. For you, Patrice, you were mentioning you wanted to be able to go in a pool and come out and have that silky straight hair. So you didn't want it to revert back to a fro, right? For me, it was the same thing. I was around a lot of white kids, in which I wanted to have my hair permed. Now, for me, I kind of upgraded because my hair, when I permed, wasn't a lot, but I still wanted to have the length, which brings us into the next point, which is the sew-in. And I loved how they explained, who was the creator of the sew-in. And, I had the perm on top of that. And the sew-in. So I could have my length. And then, you know, it's nice and crisp at the front. So I just remembered, like, how much confidence it gave me. Because now I felt like I could blend in with the rest of society. I could blend in with the white kids. In a sense, right? I mean, I obviously, your skin color will definitely show you. But the hair, you could say, you know, I could be more like them. What about you guys? Do you guys wear sew-in? I think, Simone, you wear some sew-in?
Nah, I'm in the clip-in gang. Yeah. I wear clip-ins. Yeah, because really for me right now, it's purely about time. I don't have time to do my hair, like, at all. It's bad. But I wear clip-ins just to save time, and, you know, I straighten my hair, I do the relaxer now, but it's just so part of our culture that if my hair is not done and I go out, if I'm in a white space, I don't feel any type of anxiety about my hair. It's when the other black girl walks in the room that I'm like, ah, she gonna look at my hair. She gonna see my edges. This is not good. That's when the anxiety comes for me, is when I'm around other black people who got their hair done, you know, who always have their hair done. I remember at church, there's this tall black girl. She always got her sew-in. It always looked on fleek. It was always curled the right way. You know, I was like, how does she have time to do this every Sunday morning, let alone the week? You know, like, I don't have time and the patience to do it and sit in the chair, get the salon lady to do the sew-ins, and then it hurts and then it's sore. You got an itch, you can't get it, so you pat it. It's
yes. Why are we tapping so our heads?
Because you can't get in there. So you gotta, you know. And because we're not alone in this experience, like, everybody we know can relate or has experienced the same thing, that it's so part of our culture that it's so normal for us. Like, when we explain these things and people who are not black or not from that culture hear this, they're like, what? They don't understand. But yeah, it's so weird, but I think that hair is important for all of us. But I think what it's most important is to not make it political or try to make a statement with our hair. I think it's more important to just know our personal needs and just cater to ourselves when it comes to hair.
Yeah, I agree. At this point of my life, I'm not styling my hair because you want me to look away. I'm styling it because I want to look that way. Yeah, 100%.
Period, poo. I I think that definitely we are now lucky enough to be growing into the next generation where, to a degree, there seems to be more awareness as well as more acceptance with Black hair. And I say to an degree, right? Based off of the documentary, you did see that there was still discrimination. People were getting expelled. People were losing jobs because of something that grows out of their hair, whether they decide to come to work in a fro, whether they decide to come to work in dreads, whatever. So I'm going to say to a degree. Obviously, we have more ways to go, and certain things like you saw in California, it also mentioned the Crown Act that they passed out there, which was that employers or people cannot discriminate based off of what grows out of your head. So I think that we've still got some long ways to go. I do think that it is going to be a situation of education, whether that's educating ourselves, because let me tell you, honey, I could learn some things about my hair, okay? And as well as educating others, educating employees, businesses, organizations, that our hair is going to look different compared to a person that is white, that is Asian, that is whatever that may be. Which brings me into the next one, is that we're seeing the rise of the natural hair movement. So, Pat,
yeah,
what made you decide to go natural?
So I think I was one out of a whole bunch of people out there, maybe people who are listening to this podcast, but a huge chunk of my life, I was getting my hair done professionally because I just didn't have time. If mom didn't have time, I didn't have time. And I just got used to going to the salon. The moment the pandemic happened was the moment I said to myself, this is your opportunity to learn yourself, learn your hair. And I took that time, especially I think what helped was I wasn't going out. So mm-hmm. if I was experimenting with my hair and it didn't look the way I wanted it to look, that's fine. You're home. Don't worry. But I think I learned to appreciate not just my kinks, but what it could do. Like, I could wear it straight. I could wear it in a fro. I could put a cornrow. I could do twists. Like, all these different styles I was kind of experimenting. And I think what was nice about it was that I was doing it. I didn't need someone to do it. So it was like a learning process with the pandemic. And to this day, I haven't permed my hair. I haven't permed my hair since high school. And sometimes I switch it up. Sometimes I'm doing a fro. Sometimes I'm doing twists. Sometimes I straighten it. Sometimes I'm using the hot comb. Still finding myself using it. But no, I think it's a journey. Like, our hair is a journey. I feel like learning to appreciate it and kind of putting a stop to what social expectations are of our hair and just learning to just, you know, you just gotta try it. I think like going natural is another journey, just like how when perming our hair was a journey, going natural is a journey. And some people did the big chop, some people didn't, some people just, whatever that case is, I think it was, for me personally, I think it was like a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. And it's so funny because she mentioned in the documentary too, that during the pandemic, she had to learn her hair too. There was nothing open. Mm-hmm. Everything shut down. You had to learn how to deal with your own hair, which is crazy because, as you mentioned, we're so used to going to salons to get it done that we don't even know how to maintain and manage what comes out of our own hair. So honestly, Pat, you know me, I always look at you like, girl, you look cute. You know, I always admire when you do your hair because you know how to have fun with it. You do actually learn what product's best for your hair. And, you know, it's a natural hair is a journey in itself, like you said, compared to the relaxing era. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a journey. I do know that for a lot of us, we had influencers that helped us along our journey. I remember Natural 85, Whitney, who was also in the documentary. Mm-hmm. Was who I went to for my natural. I don't do anything with my hair now. Now it's just a bun because I got time. But, you know, I would, whatever product that Whitney came out with and tried and said, you know, this was what worked with me. You best believe. I remember she did a tutorial on Shea Moisture before Shea Moisture got bought. And I ran to the store and I got some Shea Moisture products and I tried it out. So, which kind of brings me to my next point, which is the power of influencers. And we're looking at the power of influencers through all three scopes. So we're talking makeup, because you got your makeup gurus, you got your skincare gurus, mm-hmm. and you've got your hair gurus. And mm-hmm. it was interesting to see that in the documentary they were mentioning how you had specific people, but then with the rise of social media, now influencers were having a say. Influencers were the ones dictating people's spending habits. So do you remember, or I'm just going to ask you guys both, but do you remember which influencers that you followed back in then, or if not back then, now that you kind of draw inspiration from? Mona, we'll start with you.
Definitely followed Jackie Aina. She's my cousin at this point. The amount of videos I've watched. I also followed Patricia Bright. Those two were really up there for me. They don't post as much anymore because they have their own brands and things yep. like that going on. But really, during my college years, they were literally holding me by the hand and telling me how to put my makeup on, how to do my hair, how to look presentable, basically. And so, yeah, I definitely owe them a lot.
100%. Pat?
I would say, honestly, I'm going on YouTube and I'm just kind of scrolling until I find someone. They look like they have my hair time. I'll right. watch it. But on TikTok, shout out to Jeanette. I watch her and I think her products that she reviewed and showed worked for me. And I'm between TikTok and YouTube. But honestly, anyone who's going to show me how I can style my hair, I'm going to just watch you.
Yes, Jeanette. I keep forgetting Jeanette. Keep forgetting that you are a Jeanette fan. Oh, she's the oldest one. I keep forgetting. Yes. And it's funny how that I had no idea that she was a Jeanette fan until she showed me that she was a Jeanette fan. And I'm looking at her like, wait, she looks familiar. Only to find out that's Sean's cousin. Anyways.
Small world.
Only to find out that's Sean. So I was like, why did she look so familiar for? Oh, yeah. We saw her at the barbecue. Yes. With the rise of social media, we get a lot more content creators that are, you know, they have the power to influence. And so from makeup to, I think for me, like you, Simone, it was Jackie Aina as well. That was the first one. So it was Jackie. Then it was Butter Ripple, which was her name was Morgan. So that was more on the makeup end. Then it was Anitra, also known as Nitra B. She started off as makeup, but now she has kids. So I guess she's into the mother content creation. I don't remember. But then again, I haven't followed her. There was an African one. I still watch her. Oh my God, I can't remember her name. Chizzy? I think her name is Chizzy. And she did hair care as well. Those were the ones. Oh, and Whitney, Natural 85. Mm-hmm. So those were the ones that I remember watching younger and getting my inspiration. And you could go on TikTok. There's a plethora of people showing you product review, hair reviews, skincare reviews. So, it's just, you know, it's a journey. Being a black woman is a journey. Mm-hmm. We've got our hair, we're stamping making our brand on the beauty industry. We're here to say that we are not going to confide against European standards and we're creating our own lane. Listen, we're creating trends. I remember when brown lip liner was ghetto and look now. Like, everybody's doing brown lip liner. It's not ghetto anymore. You know, unfortunately, we do. They did mention, you know, we've got some culture vultures. What did they call them? Mm-hmm. We call cornrows. What did they call it? Boxer braids.
Boxer braids. Yeah. I was offended. I think I was just offended. I think that's a big thing. It's just these things have been there for a long stretch of time. And then these celebs that are Caucasian are pulling these hairdos and calling it new things, and to me that's a huge slap, because many times people who wear certain styles like braids, for example, can't get jobs because they're discriminated based on their appearance. Yet someone who's a celebrity, not Black, is getting a fashion statement and hype about how they're doing their up. No.
And they're the first ones to do it, and it's innovative. I'm like, oh. Whoa. Pause.
Did you see the girl who did the squiggly line?
Yes.
Yeah. Squiggly hair. She called it squiggly hair.
Oh, gosh.
Or squiggly lines. I was like, you bitches, I was offended. I was like, okay, now that's offensive.
Like, we've been doing it, and it just takes these colonizers to come and say, we do it and it's innovative. It just drives me absolutely bonkers. But, you know, I'm just, you know, wanted to have this episode to kind of just talk about and reflect over the three major ones. And so we're just going to wrap it up at the end of the episode, which was the Crown Effect. So that was the third part. They asked every guest on their Black beauty is, and they ask them to fill in the blanks. So I'm going to ask you guys, what is Black beauty? So Black beauty is whatever comes to your mind.
Oh gosh, this is a strong one. I feel like Black beauty is, it's personal. I feel like it's personal, not in the sense that you can't, if you're not Black, like, no. Like, it's personal in the sense that it's within you. It's something that you've, you know, Black beauty is something you were taught from mom, from grandma, from aunts, you know, like, it's personal.
It's like a journey.
That it's not just, exactly. I think
a personal journey, I guess you could say.
A personal journey. Yeah.
Black beauty is a personal journey. Okay. Pat says that. Simone?
Like, I want to keep it simple. Black beauty is beautiful. Just keep it classic, because it is true.
I agree.
And I'm gonna say Black beauty is innovative and constantly evolving. Because it is. And I just want to say thank you guys for being on this episode and just kind of going over it and, you know, having the discussion about hair, beauty, skincare, and makeup. So for my listeners, if you haven't tuned in, definitely go watch The Black Beauty Effect on Netflix. Again, I do also believe it's on Xfinity if you're in the US as well and you have access to that.
Special thanks goes out to Patrice and Simone for being on today's episode. It was a fun episode in which we were able to give our inputs and thoughts about the documentary, what we liked, what we didn't like, what we had wished that they had included, but also to have the trip down memory lane, being Black girls growing up in a Eurocentric world, what Black beauty was like for us and how it transformed, whether that meant we get our hair pressed or we got our hair permed. What did our skincare routine look like? And so much more. This episode would not have been possible without them. So here are my thoughts on the documentary. I thought it was wonderfully done. I thought that bringing in everybody in the industry when it comes to Black beauty, from hair and talking about its roots of how it evolved, talking about makeup, where it started, how it evolved, talking about skincare and how that evolved, how once upon a time, I remember how much skin bleaching was really like the thing. And it is still the thing, but it seems as though that we're moving away from that. So I liked how it incorporated the historical component to it, and provided some knowledge on, you know, who were the four founders of this and who started that and what salon was open because of this, and all of the statistics alongside with it was very informative, and I enjoy that. Gives me an idea as to how powerful the black dollar really is, as I'd mentioned, how much money us as black people put into it. And again, these statistics are American based, but I can only imagine like the black Canadian dollar and how much we invest in businesses. And whenever we find a product that we really love, we'll definitely, you know, encourage others to buy it and try it. Now, there was a part of the conversation that I had that I didn't get a chance to discuss, and that is the conversation of selling out. In the documentary, the owner of Carol's Daughter is in there. And I remember back in the day, it was such an uproar when Carol's Daughter sold to L'Oreal. For a lot of people, they felt that the formula would change. Now, I'd never followed up with that to see if the formula did in fact change. But there's definitely that argument in terms of whenever black entrepreneurs get something and they make something big, will they hold on to it and let that be a legacy that passes on for generations? Or will they sell it off? And then, you know, in many cases, can it be a situation where we watch these businesses kind of crumble and, you know, end up in our history books? And that's pretty much it. Recently, and I don't want to say this recently, but I believe it was sometime last year, the famous hair company Miel, I think they pronounce it, they also sold off their business. And there's definitely that genuine concern, because when we finally find something that works for us, especially when it comes to the realm of hair, we really hold on to it. Now, while I do understand the argument of, you know, they can't hold on to this business because it's not sustainable and they don't have the capital or the production to allow it to continue, I think it's just our fear that, you know, the formula changes and then it's no longer a product that is viable for us. So I do understand the entrepreneurial aspect of it, but I do hope that that changes in the future and that we don't sell it off, because, I mean, it's black wealth. I don't see anything wrong with that, and continuing on the legacy and continuing it on for more black and brown individual to consume. Now, overall, my thoughts on this documentary, I didn't see anything wrong with it, really. Also, I mean, there's nothing much that I really can critique about it. Again, a lot of the historical information is of an American lens. It wouldn't be of a Caribbean lens, since my ancestry is Jamaican. And it wouldn't be of a Canadian lens either, right? So can't really critique the history of this historic component to it. As I mentioned in the documentary, I would love for them to go maybe a little bit more in depth, maybe pump out instead of three, a total of six episodes of it. I think because we thoroughly enjoyed it, that we would have loved to see more from it. But overall, I thought it was a great a documentary that definitely should be watched. Now, I know, I remember having the conversation with my sister just before we had recorded the episode, and she wasn't too invested into it, I guess. I wouldn't say invested, but I think she was just expecting more out of it, and she thought it was just okay. So I'll definitely let you as my listeners decide. Again, the name of the documentary is called The Black Beauty Effect. You can find that on Netflix, and I believe you can also find it on Xfinity if you are in the States. And let me know what you thought of the documentary. I think the only qualms, I guess, some people may have had is that they did pull in terms of the influencer aspect, and I think that'd be maybe a little bit of an injustice that I don't mention this, as I am a content creator, podcaster. And I think the only issue was that because I took a lot of information, and I mean more visual component information, from maybe mediums such as TikTok and potentially YouTube, they didn't credit who was used. I saw a few content creators in there that I recognized, and I did not see any kind of acknowledgement of those, such as maybe putting in their Instagram handle, if it was off of Instagram, their TikTok handle, just some sort of awareness, maybe that, or some credit to these influencers and content creators. As you know, there are people in the documentary that are content creators and influencers, and they know how recognition is very important. So I think maybe that would be the only critique I could have about it. Apart from that, I thought it was well done, broken up into three parts. It was nice to see the gurus that you grew up on, like Jackie Aina and Whitney, Natural 85. So overall, it was great. Let me know what you think. I'll leave a poll in the Spotify version of this episode. So if you have Spotify, sometimes I will leave a poll, sometimes I will leave a what do you think of this episode, and I think I'll add a poll just to see if you, you know, for those who have watched it, what did they think of the episode. And I'll also leave a an opportunity for you to leave comments on it as well. What did you like? What did you not like? What do you wish that they did differently? But leave all of your comments there. If you do not aren't able to listen from Spotify, find us on Instagram. I will post this question on Instagram as well. How many have watched the episodes, all three parts? What did you like? What did you not like? That's right. That means you're going to have to follow my podcast page on Instagram. Do the same thing on Twitter and again on Facebook. So if you're not following, what are you waiting for? I will leave all that information on the show notes below or in the comments section or wherever you can find that information. But I'd love to pick your brain and see what your thoughts are on these this particular documentary. If you enjoyed today's conversation, today's episode, definitely rate and review. If you're listening from Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you know what to do. I say this every episode, rate and review. Like I said, it helps small indie podcasters like me get more eyes on my podcast. And if you are listening from any other outlet, what you can definitely do is share if you do not have the ability to rate and review. So just share the episode with a friend who would love to hear it, you know, have the conversation, and you know, come back to us and let me know what you guys thought of the episode, on our thoughts on this discussion, on our journey, even just reminiscing on this. And I will catch you guys on the next episode.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.